I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Nancy Singleton Hachisu. She is the author of the new book, Japanese Farm Food. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Great to be here.
It's a wonderful, fascinating book that is not only full of recipes, but it is kind of the story of your life, or at least your adult life.
Right.
You were a cook and very interested in food and went to Japan, fell in love with a Japanese farmer, mm-hmm. and spent the rest of your life there.
Well, it's not the rest yet, but yeah, I will be there.
So far.
Right. Yeah.
So how did that happen?
Well, you know, after college, I was working in San Francisco in the bar and restaurant business, and I just decided to, this, you know, enough was enough. And I had, in the early 80s, been introduced to sushi. Actually, it was not introduced. It was, I had eaten sushi and I had eaten Japanese food as a child, but I fell in love in a big way with the whole sushi bar experience. You know, we call sushiya. Bar is not a really good translation of it, but I mean, just sitting down and in front of a counter where the, we became friends with the master, the chef, and just getting, I mean, that, you know, communication plus the being able just to sit there by yourself or with a friend and get the, you know, those little light bites of food one by, you know, two by two, and just the freshness. It just completely appealed to everything I loved about food and about how I love to eat. And so then I also happened to be into languages, and I really wanted to understand what people were saying. They were always screaming in Japanese. So I was, when I decided to go to graduate school, I thought, well, you know, what the hell? You know, a JD is not enough. I'm going to pop in a master's in East Asian studies and get some Japanese under my belt, you know. And in, to that end, I went to Japan as an English teacher to what I thought to learn Japanese in a year. But it of course, was not going to happen as an English teacher. It's going to take a lot longer, you know. You have to live in the life. So, and then by then I met my husband-to-be right away. We were friends for a long time, but I knew I needed to spend more time than one, you know. And so I held off applying to graduate school and just took it as it went along and then never did apply.
And your husband proposed to you and said, would you like to be a Japanese farm wife?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I grew up in Atherton, but my parents were very beatniky. And in fact, my life is a lot more like my original life was now than it was in the intervening years of going off to Stanford, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, he was very into the, you know, organic style of life. And I was too, to an extent, but not to the extent of like living without electricity. You know, this was his ideal lifestyle and it was not mine. But I knew that he was a good man, and I was willing to, you know, just take a chance. But then I did get cold feet, and I got my sister to come on over and make sure I was not, you know, making some crazy choice. Of course, she fell in love with him and thought he was the greatest thing and, you know, would always tell me, be nice to him, be nice to him.
And, I mean, it sounds like you have had such an interesting life because there are so many things about, I mean, there are so many things about cooking and food that were already your interest. Then there
right.
you are working
mm-hmm.
on a farm, which is, as I understand it, even beyond organic, what we
right.
call organic
yeah.
farming.
Because it's called Shizen Noho in Japanese. It's natural farming, where you don't use animal products in the field. And we are farmers in that we, my husband's an agrarian, he's a free-range egg farmer, but his family's never grown vegetables and sold them. It's always just been for the family, you know, and that was the traditional model. There's very few of those kind of farmers around. Well, not very, very few, but there's much less than they were, you know, say, 50 years ago or 40 years ago.
Because you know. Everyone wanted to go to the city and...
Well, also the parents pushed their kids out to the city. And unfortunately what's happened is that their idea was go out to Tokyo and then they thought they would be coming back. But, you know, once they're entrenched in that Tokyo lifestyle, people in Tokyo feel like it's an incredibly convenient place. I find Tokyo to be the most inconvenient place in this, you know, practically in this world.
Why is that?
Well, it's because you're at Shinjuku Station, one of the big stations. It almost takes you an hour to get from to walk from one side to the other. You know, to even find any, you can't move so easily. And we have everything we need within 5, 10, 15 minutes. I don't need 10 million restaurants, you know? I mean, we eat mostly at home, but we've got one great, you know, restaurant that we can... We have several great restaurants we can go to, but they're simple, and you don't need a huge choice if you've got some good choices.
Well, and especially, it sounds like most of your good choices are at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and so, you know, it feels like if we've got a... You know, growing things, you know, it depends on the weather, energy level. And so, sure, we have more things at one time and less at others, but we are also incredibly fortunate that we have these other Shizen Noho friends who professionally grow vegetables. And there's this one main farmer, and there's more and more farmers who are moving to the area and following in, you know, sort of that they're being mentored by this great farmer who's been doing it for 55 years, a special family friend.
So they're moving out of cities, back to a simpler lifestyle.
Right. And so they're not maybe good at it the first 1, 2, 3 years. The next sub farmer underneath this main farmer, besides his son, you know, he's been doing it for about 10 years now, and his vegetables have become spectacular. You really can tell they're good, great, you know, and that's exciting. So we have some backup. And so when you have all this gorgeous stuff, you know, and you think it makes, you know, it says cook me, you know, and so it's less appealing to go out.
So you grow a lot of your own vegetables. And one of the things I think is so important and interesting is the kind of relationship that you have with the food you're growing. So you write in the book about listening to the vegetables.
Yeah. I mean, I was into organics before I went to Japan, but it didn't mean that I 100% would only buy organic vegetables, you know, and they were hard to find when I was first there. But living with my husband and living with his, you know, with his vegetables and with, it was certainly a process of learning how, I mean, and that, I mean, how they tasted differently. And then also that I couldn't just say make up a cooking menu. I was going to do a cooking class a month hence or 2 months hence, and I'm going to use green beans come hell or high water, you know, and there you don't, maybe we don't have them in our area, but they've got them down in Kyushu and they're organic, you know, but by the time they come up here, they're up to where we live, they're, you know, kind of droopy and things. And so, you know, just completely changing the way you look at it, that you go out and the more you pick it yourself and the more you go out there and touch them. And now, I mean, it used to be when we had small kids, my husband would pick the vegetables for me for Thanksgiving or the big events, you know, where there was a lot of vegetables to pick and we had to really, but now I go out ahead of time and I just harvest it all and pick it and feel it and think and decide what I want to do with it from how it feels and how it touches. And, you know, I think that all cooks, you know, not everybody can do that, but you can certainly go to the farmer's market, and the more alive it is, the more, and more exciting it is to cook, you know? So, what off the soapbox.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting. I once, years ago, had a friend who was a really good and enthusiastic gardener. We were eating a salad one day, and right before she started eating, she said, "This salad just wants to be eaten." And it was sort of a beautiful thing because she had, like, a relationship with this.
Yeah.
These
yeah.
kind of very recently living things that
right,
she
right,
had grown.
Right, right, right.
And yeah. I wondered, what are some of the basic ingredients of the kind of cooking that you do on the farm? And we're talking about the book, Japanese Farm Food.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, I do all kinds of cooking, but this is one of the kinds of cooking we do. But for Japanese farm food, you're going to need, I mean, you should have great soy sauce, you know, and of course I believe in organic soy sauce, and our local soy sauce and miso is available online through Goldmine Natural Foods. Really good miso, organic miso. Eden Foods is another good alternative for American brands, and good brown rice vinegar. And then after that, I mean, I use Japanese sea salt. That's not, you know, you don't have to use Japanese sea salt, but I used to use Italian, Sicilian salt, Trapani salt, but now I'm in love with the Japanese. I don't think I'll change, you know. Some, you know, we use occasionally some mirin, you say in English, but a real mirin, a home mirin, not some syrupy, fake sugar stuff.
Right.
Makes a big difference in the flavor profile, you know. And we don't use much sugar in our food because our vegetables are naturally sweet. But after the war, that sort of that whole sugar paradigm became more and more popular.
Right.
Especially not just in town food, but all over, you know. I just wanted to say, just back, jumping back to the vegetables and how they kind of make you want to cook. I think that's one of the reasons why there's a big problem in Japan now. People are cooking less and less. I mean, like all over the world, though I think in America it's sort of resurging, you know, the home cooking. You know, if they don't have great ingredients, you become less inspired to cook. And so, you know, you're on your way home and, you're passing a convenience store and you can just grab one of these, you know, meals that look like they're sort of, oh, it looks like it's all healthy. It's, you know, all balanced and lots of, there's vegetable this and vegetable that and some, you know, meat or fish or whatever, you know, but it's got lots of preservatives and MSG and, you know, it's just not a healthy alternative. But, you know, finding those raw ingredients are harder in Tokyo. And so it's, I mean, it's a job. But when you find them, and when you go out of your way to find them, it makes you excited about cooking. So
when you say there's a problem in Japan, what is the problem? I mean, is it a health problem specifically?
No, the government, of course, is worried. Yes, it becomes a health problem because there's a rise in obesity in kids, you know. I mean, it's not like the United States, but there's a dip in rice consumption.
Really?
Yeah, rice consumption is declining. It has been declining.
What are they eating instead?
Bread.
Ah.
For breakfast. I don't know about the dinner. And just a decline in home cooking, you know.
Do you find that you feel healthy and that people around you in rural Japan are healthier than people who are eating poorer diets?
It's not just the food. I mean, it's the whole lifestyle, you know, and it's the living with fresh air lifestyle. It's in the cities or in the suburbs, houses are built to be, you know, closed up and used air conditioning in the summer and some sort of a heating, like forced air heating. They don't have central heating, but forced air heating of various rooms. And so the air is not good. And also living in more cramped quarters, there's less dirt, which I find unusual. You know, just the air is different, city air or suburb air. You don't have, you know, dirt from the fields, which is a natural kind of normal thing.
Right.
You know, it's not just one thing, you know. And just, yeah. And I think that, you know, the problems of a modern culture, I mean, like in Japan, we're not just losing food cultures, we're also losing you know, the artisan cultures.
There's a lot of wonderful description in your book about, for example, fixing up the old farmhouse and taking the kind of modern stuff and restoring it to the way it was before.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and we were at loggerheads with my parents-in-law about that. I mean, my mother-in-law would say to me, Nancy, you can't use that recycled wood. I'd say, but we like it. It's cool. But no, because, you know, your guests are going to come here and they want to see new wood. So, well, we're living here, you know.
And probably the way you've done it, I mean, judging from the pictures in the book and the way you describe it, is to our contemporary aesthetic much more beautiful because, in fact, you're using the old beams and things like that.
Well, the old beams were existing, you know, and this 80, I guess it's been about 85 years since they redid the original structure and they recycled the beans. We didn't do any big structural changes except for make rooms and add walls. We didn't change beams and things like that. But we recycled old wood we had found or places where they had taken up floorboards and, you know. And we stained the white wood that was the new white wood that was put in. It's called hinoki. You know, this a beautiful wood that's desirable for its pretty grain and how it's going to become, you know, burnished over time. But, you know, becoming burnished over time means having a wood-burning fire in your house and waiting 50 years to get this, you know, incredible patina that's, you know, going to happen after we're dead and won't happen because actually we don't have a wood-burning stove anymore, right. You know. And so we tried very hard to stain it in a way that it matched the old wood in the house, and we did.
We're talking to Nancy Singleton Hashisu about the book Japanese Farm Food. Now, give us some examples. Like on an average day, what do you eat for each meal?
Oh, well, me, I eat toast and coffee for breakfast. Pete's coffee from
so
Berkeley.
So sometimes we just don't adapt.
Yeah. My husband's going to eat whatever leftovers are hanging around. He likes kimchi, you know. He eats, if he could have rice 3 times a day, he does, you know. Lunch I cook at the school, and so I do any number of things, whether it's Japanese food or Western food. It all depends on my mood, truly, you know.
And you have a school which is an English immersion school,
right,
for Japanese children.
Yes. And so, I mean, I used to plan the menu ahead of time and sort of follow it, but now I don't even bother doing that because I just, you know, I make what I feel like, and my assistant is, my Japanese assistant is cooking now. But and the kids are incredible. They're from aged, you know, 1.5 to 6. They when I walk in the school to come, you know, cook the lunch, they come in from playing outside, "What's for lunch today, Nancy?" And I tell them, and even if they don't understand, "Yay!" You know, and then they sit for like 45 minutes at the table, all told, which is incredibly unusual for kids that age. And they don't get wiggly. They wait for the food to be finished. I have them sit down before it's actually completely finished. And depending on my timing, I'm finishing it, putting it on the plates, and we're taking it to the table, and then, you know, they're eating and they're having seconds, and we mark who gets seconds, who finishes it, who has the clean plate, who has the cleanest floor area, you know, and they get very excited about, you know, they hold up the plate, look, you know, and they all say, "Thank you for cooking, Nancy," you know. It's incredibly adorable, and it makes you want to cook again for them, you know? And they eat their vegetables, not all of them, but pretty much.
There's a very nice short essay in the book about Japanese strength of character in which you talk about your husband and how he is.
Yep.
Describe that to us. What do you mean?
Well, you know, this is really the farm ideal. There was, and I wonder what's going to happen with, you know, modern Japan. But it's like after the war, all of those farm guys went to Tokyo and made those companies that were so successful. It's this idea that you get up every morning and you work so damn hard, and you are honest with each other, and you take responsibility for your family. And it's not just you, it's the whole family, it's the whole community that you have responsibility for. There's a deep sense of responsibility, and that you just, this idea of always, you know, working hard and you know, producing, but they have a different rhythm, let me say, that they take tea breaks. They have, it's not just all working hard. So that's where, it's it's a rhythm of life that's different from what I was ever used to. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, so they wake up really early and they have breaks. They wake up really early and then they come home for lunch, for breakfast around 8-ish. And then they have the meal, you know, and then they, it's not like they're running from X to Z to Y or whatever.
No, they're not frenetic.
No,
they
don't complain. No. And then they can easily take an hour break. Happily, easily. Now, I get up and I start going and I never stop. I can't take a break. It would make me completely crazy, you know? And it's hard for me to sit down and like just chat with somebody because I always think of all the stuff I need to do. You know, it's a it's a different way of planning your day. But
and it seems to show up even in these children who are able to sit still, which for American parents, they are probably shaking their heads and saying that's just not possible.
Well, yeah, but most Japanese kids are not going to be able to do that either. So it's a thing of the past, you know, in many ways, you know. I mean, as children get older, they learn, you know, they learn in school.
Now, you also, you grew up not eating a whole lot of meat, and that's part of your lifestyle now, too.
Yeah. I mean, we grew up in a time when my mother wasn't, we had six kids in our family, and she was thrifty, and so pieces of meat were smaller, sunset kind of meals. No big traditional American meals with the roasts and things like that, you know. The closest thing we came was at Thanksgiving and Christmas with turkey.
You celebrate Thanksgiving and Christmas in Japan.
Yep. Well, we have we have half American kids, so, you know, got to show them something about the life.
Do you miss being here? Do you feel completely happy and at home in Japan?
At Christmas time or any time?
In general.
No, I don't miss it. I mean, I travel, I come back enough. And the only odd thing is just like part of not being able to like go to the grocery store and run into friends from childhood, things like that. But because of the internet and Facebook and email, but also, but a lot Facebook, you know, you can run into them in a different way.
Right.
And so life has changed. And
you can probably find out more about what they're doing than you do at the grocery store.
More than you want.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I like my life, and I don't miss the American way of life.
Nancy Singleton Hachisu is author of the wonderful book Japanese Farm Food, which is available at Collected Works, although I think they're out of it right now, but they're getting new copies
in.
And you, Nancy, will be tonight at 7 o'clock at Bookworks in Albuquerque, and you'll be serving food and signing copies of the book and serving homemade miso and... You'll also be teaching, what is it, a food class?
Yeah, where I'll be demoing and teaching a class and lunch at Los Poblanos.
At Los Poblanos, also in Albuquerque. And I don't know if there's any spaces left in that class. I suppose people can call and find out.
Yeah,
but
I don't know.
We hope to have you back in New Mexico one of these days soon.
I'm happy to be here.
Well, thank you for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.